You know, I think I mentioned, might have mentioned this to you, but, you know, being disabled, like, you get, it happened to me at 18, you don't feel complete. You're always a brick short of a load. So, you know, you kind of stumble through life until you come to terms with that incompleteness, and you look for that completeness. And it wasn't until I got on a motorcycle that I felt that completeness and the struggle to, you know, against it receded. And I, you know, it was like freedom.
And that was the voice of my guest today, Camille Zogby. And this is Ted, your host here on the Motorcycle Man Podcast. And this is episode 288.
It's Motorcycle Man.
Hello, boys and girls. Today's interview is with Camille Zogby. He is a disabled rider, and he is going to tell us about what he went through and what he did so he could keep riding. So stick around, and we'll get to this interview in a moment. The Motorcycle Men Podcast is brought to you by Scorpion Helmets. Now, they're offering high-quality, innovative motorcycle helmets and technical apparel at an incredible value. To learn more, you go on over to scorpionusa.com. And, of course, Shinko Tires. Now, they have a tire to suit your needs and riding style without breaking your bank account. So you want to go on over to Shinko Tire USA and think of Shinko. And you tell them that the Motorcycle Men sent you. And, of course, the real Craig Johnson over at Wild Ass Seats tells us you can improve your comfort and ability to stay in the saddle longer with a cushion from Wild Ass Seats. I have a Wild Ass Seat cushion, and I love it. I ride with it all the time. So if you are tired of those painful pressure points and fatigue, go to wild-ass.com and get your cushion today. And don't forget to tell the real Craig Johnson that the Motorcycle Men Podcast sent you. Now, Uclear Digital, if you've got one of those headset communication systems, you want to enhance your ride with Uclear's DynaMesh-compatible intercom. They got powerful music, crystal clear phone calls on any road, any trail, and on any helmet. Very portable system. You can move it from helmet to helmet. It's awesome. And that's what I use. So to learn more, you go on over to uclearddigital.com and you tell them that the Motorcycle Men Podcast sent you, and they'll take care of you over there. You talk to Dave, all right? And of course, our good friends over at Tobacco Motorwear. That's right. Dave's Pants, for the best in casual riding gear for men and women. There's only one place you should be going, and that is Tobacco Motorwear. So go visit them at tobaccomotorwear.com, and our great, wonderful listeners will get 10% off your order when you use that coupon code MOTOMEN. Now, your safety is worth it, so get on over there and tell Dave that you want to get in his pants, all right? Time now for that interview. All right, boys and girls, here we are with a really great interview. My guest today is, I'm going to butcher your name. I know I am. So, Camille Zogby, is that correct?
Zogby.
Camille Zogby. And Camille's got a really interesting story. He's actually a Motorcycle Men listener, but he's... We're going to let him improve the quality of the show now. Camille, why don't you tell us your story and what you're all about?
Well, you know, I've been listening to podcasts on motorcycling for as long as I've been riding, which is about 8 years. I'm 58 years old. And, you know, I had never heard a podcast on anything or the subject matter was disabled riders. And, I even wrote one podcaster, and he wrote me back. I won't mention Ted who it was, but they wrote me back and said, "Yeah, that they didn't think there really would be any interest in that. They didn't look at it as a topic in the past."
Wow, so, that's crazy.
Went nowhere. But everywhere I go, there's interest in it, and then there's a story that goes along with it about being disabled, and I think that anybody. You know, I always tell people I'm lucky my disability's on the outside. You can see it. But every day,
that's a very good way to look at it. That's great.
We deal with people who have disabilities that are on the inside. So when they snap at us or yell at us or whatever, however they act, we can't see what that disability is, right? It inhibits our ability to have a relationship with them. So, you know, so I wanted to show people that are disabled that we can do things too. And I wanted to show people who never thought of it or didn't think somebody could do it that you know, disabled people can do stuff too as well.
Well, you are a disabled rider. So now tell us how this came to be.
Oh, so when I was 18, a week or so after high school graduation, I got my hand caught, piece of machinery, lost my right hand. And I had this kind of secret dream always of riding a motorcycle. After that accident, you know, I just never thought it would be possible. Yeah. You know, I put that dream away for a long, long time. I lived in New York City, you know, not exactly a place to maybe start riding a motorcycle at work.
Particularly not.
You know, San Francisco, I lived for a year in the Middle East that, you know, or so. So I didn't really have a chance to start there. But, you know, later on in life, I was my first wife, I bought her a scooter and I used to just stare at that thing. How the hell, you know? So, you know, I started looking at how I could ride a motorcycle and it was pretty depressing.
Wow. I can imagine it would be. Now, I mean, so you were in New York and you said you were in the Middle East for a while.
Yeah, I have a degree in Middle East studies. So it afforded me, I have to have 2 years of a language to graduate. So I dropped Spanish freshman year and because I didn't like it, I never took it back up. So wasn't going to pick it up junior year. So I went to the Middle East where I could do 2 years of Arabic in 2 months.
Wow.
And I ended up staying about 11 and traveled all over North Africa and the Middle East at a time when you could do that.
Yeah.
And remain intact.
Wow, that's so amazing.
Yeah, so, you know, my life was very, very busy. I, you know, after losing my hand, you just ship yourself off to college and you don't you know, you don't really, back then in the early 80s, there wasn't, hey, you know, maybe this kid should get some PTSD counseling or something like that. You know, it was kind of like that, that walk it off attitude, right?
Right. Yeah.
So I went through 20 or 30 years of just like living on the edge of like life and death. I wasn't starving or anything, but between drugs and alcohol and other types of activity, I just, you know, I was kind of fighting my way out of this.
Yeah.
And one day, Ted, after a divorce, you know, after a year of hard Scrabble drinking, right, I ended up in a 21-day coma.
Wow.
And, you know, the doctors gave me like a 5% chance.
Oh.
And so one day they just told my parents they were going to pull the tubes and like, that's it, time's up or whatever, we're going to see. So I ended up breathing and I always tell the story. It's kind of funny. You know, they want to test your mental acuity. So the doctor brought in opened her hand and she had a pile of change. And she, how much is here? You know, 82 cents. She takes away a nickel. You know, how much is there now? 77 cents. And, you know, the joke is like, I'm Lebanese. Like, we are the most thrifty, cheapest people on the face of the earth.
Well, I told her, like,
you know, you could carve my cranium out and wake me up at 3 a.m. I could still change a 20, right?
Let me ask you this: were you right-handed before the accident?
I was.
So you had to learn how to write left-handed and all that.
I went to college. Like, I'll never forget these people, these wonderful people. Like, the Elks Club bought me like a dictation tape recorder.
Right.
So I would record like a, you know, a 45-minute philosophy class, go back to my dorm room and, you know, listen to the tape and try to like take notes. Right. And like, you know, after, you know how it is, after like 2 weeks of that, you're like, fuck this. You know, like, you just start doing things by using your memory as best you can. Once again, I was in college. The drinking age was 18. So, you know.
Back then, old days.
I mean, my freshman year, I got a 398 and a 390. I never left my dorm room. You know, but, you know, after the accident, like, you feel like you're a brick short of a load. You don't go out, you know, you're not out of the dating scene or whatever. You know, you're a guy with one hand.
I understand. Now, prior to losing your hand, were you a rider?
I would never rode a motorcycle in my life. Wow. There were guys who lived, we had like a college campus behind us with like, you know, paved soccer fields, and guys in the neighborhoods had mini bikes. And, you know, they're very covetous. They wouldn't let you ride them, you know, and it was kind of a status thing. But my dad would, you know, never let us get one, never let me get a, you know, a motorcycle that, you know, as long as you live under my roof kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, and then after the accident, I figured, when I go away to college, you know, when I get out of here, it's my ticket. But, you know, my friend Paul Cardamone had an XR50 in Utica, New York, and man, you'd hop on the back of that thing, and we'd ride through brush and trails and, you know, all kinds of places we weren't supposed to be. And it was like a burning dream, man. You know, someday, boy, you know, being on the back of one of these, or being on one of these things is, you know, got to be the greatest feeling. But the dream just kind of went on a shelf, and then, you know, comb ahead. And
you, excuse me, but you had met someone who changed things for you. Now, who was that, and how did that meeting go?
You know, it's my fiance who I'm marrying next month. But I met her after the coma. Now, Ted, after the coma, what does a guy who can drink a bottle or two of whiskey a day, you know, between the hours of 6 p.m. and 2 a.m., you know, is he just going to quit drinking? Nah, of course not. So I met this girl, and man, she knew my history. She found out I went back to drinking, and that was that. She just, you know, it was every day to an AA meeting with her in the car in the parking lot. So I couldn't have sconed out the back door. Right.
Right.
But, you know, one day I came, you know, I haven't had a drink since, but one day I came home and she said, you know, my dad went to the VA hospital down in Asheville today for his checkup, and his doctor went to medical school with some guy who started some company called Advanced Arm Dynamics, and they have a prosthetic specifically made for riding motorcycles.
Ooh.
So I went to work the next day. I Googled the company. They had an 800 number. I called them. Lady says to me, where do you live? I said, I'm in Philadelphia. She says, we have an office in Philadelphia. She gives me the address. It's literally two blocks from my office in downtown Philly. So I literally hung up the phone and like was on my way down there. And we sat down like at that meeting, and we drew out the prosthetic and how they were going to make it. And I went out. I was so giddy after that meeting. I went out and bought a motorcycle, you know, without even, you know, without even the prosthetic being made.
What, really? You just right away just went out and bought a bike. What did the salesman at the dealer say to you?
You know what? I'm like one of these, like I told you, I was thrifty, right? So, like, you know, you start combing. Back, this is like 8-9 years ago. So back then it was like you start combing Craigslist, right?
Yeah, of course.
And so I didn't know. I had to start thinking about, like, once again, there was like no websites, like nobody to tell. If you got a prosthetic right hand and you got a normal left hand, what bike do you go to? If I asked you that question sitting next to you in a bar, what would you say?
I wouldn't even know where to go.
I wouldn't know where to start.
No,
right?
No. I would think the first thing that would come to my mind would be, well, can't you just switch the controls and just put the throttle on the left and just switch everything?
Okay, so if you have your throttle on the left, where is your clutch lever going
to
go?
Yeah, that would have to be a foot clutch.
and then like, so you see where I'm going here?
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So you call the shop and you're like, yeah, listen, you always got to start with the preamble. You got to explain why you're asking this stupid question, right?
Right.
And so you tell them about your injury, like whatever. And, you know, is there any way, have you ever heard of a foot clutch? And all you hear is crickets on the other end. And then invariably they finish, well, I don't really do that kind of work around here, you know. And, you know, do you know anybody? No, I don't really know anybody. And then, like, that's it. And, you know, it's like 20, 30 phone calls, and you just hang up, and you're like, it can't be this difficult, right?
But it's weird because, like in the 20s and 30s and 40s, even some of the 50s, it was foot clutch.
And there were left-handed throttles.
Yeah. Well, I didn't know about the left-handed throttles, but at least it was a foot clutch and a hand shifter.
Indian, Indian had a left-handed throttle. I think it was Indian or Harley or Indian, but they you know why? Because they were marketing to police departments, and a guy could pull his gun and shoot at the same time while he was driving.
Oh, they're talking about cowboy days.
I just saw a documentary on it recently, but
that's interesting.
Yeah, you know, you ask these guys, and you know, a couple of shops. So I bought, you know, so back to the bike, you know, so you know, what do you buy? So what about a Honda-matic?
Yeah. Right?
Remember
okay.
The Honda-matics?
Yeah, yeah.
So they made them in 400, 450, 750. So I figured, all right, I need a smaller one. So I started hunting for a 400, you know, Honda Hawk. And okay. I forget which guys, what some of the podcasts, they derisively call them Hawk-o-matics, which I enjoyed the humor and the derision, you
sure.
know, because once I knew how to ride, that bike was worthless to me because I couldn't get on any major roadway and get out of my own way with it. But in any event, I literally found this guy in the Poconos who had an advanced illness, and he had bought the bike and brand new in San Francisco, right? Had it all these years and dragged it back to upstate Pennsylvania where it sat in a garage. And this guy had like Picassos. I mean, he had like nice stuff, right? I mean, he had really nice art collection.
Yeah.
And, so they sell me the bike for $1,250, right? And the only thing that was wrong, they had a dent in the gas tank where the guy, a piece of firewood had fell on it because they were out in the sticks and you know, they burn wood. So so I bought the bike. And, you know, then I had it back in my hands and I started hunting around and I brought it to several shops and several people just like, you know, robbed me blind. And didn't make the bike like anywhere near where I could ride it, like it was safe to me to ride, or even I would contemplate getting on.
Wow!
So
you would wonder why the modifying would be such a challenge, though, right? You would think these are fabricators; they should be able to do it.
Well, they're people who own motorcycle shops, and people who own motorcycle shops, a lot of them do some things really, many things very well. Some do some things well. Some pretend that they can do other things well. You know, it depends on, you know, so really what you're looking for is you're kind of looking for a mad genius who, and that's what I found. You're looking for a guy who looks at it and doesn't see like a series of problems ahead of him. He sees some challenges.
Yeah, yeah.
And his confidence level, because if not only his mechanical, but his engineering skills, he can get past these things.
Yeah.
And, you know, I met a guy.
Well, how many fabricators, mechanics, and shops did you approach until you found somebody who could do what you needed?
Well, if you consider the phone calls, you're probably talking about 30 or 40 phone calls in the Philadelphia metropolitan area. I was one to drag that bike anywhere.
Wow. I mean, you would think that for especially this area, the Northeast, New York, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, that you would find somebody who had the brains to do that.
Or I think it's more than the brains, though. I think it's like, you know, there's also a human element. Like, hey, I want to help this guy out.
Yeah.
Like, I see what he's going through. I think I can do this. This seems interesting.
Right.
And I got to tell you, like, you know, I've been through this twice now in different cities now. And it's really astounding, like even in 2021, the first time this happened was, you know, 8 years ago.
Yeah.
So a lot's changed since then with machining, CNC, like all this stuff, right?
Yeah.
So, but I wandered into this guy's shop and like, you know, Philly, Kensington, and, you know, gritty area, you know, SBKH, Moto, and it's intimidating. You walk into a shop, the guys are standing around, they size you up, you know, and so you got to go through this, you know, and this guy's like 6'4", right? I'm like 5'8", and, you know, and you could tell just by looking at him, he's had every kind of customer you can imagine. And so I told him the whole story, and I told him who did what to me, without, you know, without any names. And I said, you know, this is where I am. This is my dream. All I want to do is be able to ride this motorcycle And he looked at me. His name is Vinny Lopiano, and he just said, I can do it. God, and, you know, that guy, he was probably one of, next to Tracy, my fiance, probably the most important person in where I am today, because never any mocking. You know, guys at shops can be pretty brutal, right? But, like, no matter what I threw at him, he built me a custom bobber, and we'll get to the clutch in a problem in a second, but he found his way around any obstacle, and he took that CB, and you know, he made it a runner, and I rode that bike until I took my my motorcycle safety test. Wow. And then I sold it the next day.
Damn. Yeah, because I'm looking at some of the bikes that you got, because you sent me photos. And you got the Honda, look at the Cafe Racer.
Now this is what I was going to tell you earlier. The reason I told you that was like a near mint condition, CP 400 is because as soon as I got my hands on it, I chopped it up and I did all the things you shouldn't do. So that's another thing, though.
As you do.
Probably done a whole show on what to do, how to buy a bike, you know, your first bike, and what to do and what not to do.
Right. Now, I'm looking at this bobber. This is the yellow Honda, correct?
Yeah, so that started out as a 2003 CB750 Nighthawk, and I wanted a bobber. And everybody told me I was nuts because, for doing it with a Honda, you should buy a Yamaha with an XS650, you know, get an Evo, like all this. And I was like, you know, at the time I was a Honda guy, and I was like, and I still am a Honda guy, and I was like, no, I want to do a CB750. I had my mind set on it.
Right.
So I found this dude who had two really mint vintage bikes, but the CB750, he rolled on some gravel because he kind of went into a turn, misjudged his traction, and I caught that bike when it was like 4 hours on Craigslist, right? Called this guy up. He had a scab, just released from the hospital, a scab from head to toe. I kid you not. And he's I just need some closure. I just got to get rid of the bike.
Right.
So I gave him $1,200 in closure. The bike had 5,000 miles on it, and it hardly had a scratch on it. The tank is still mint.
I like the way you said that, $1,200 in closure. I like that.
Yeah. So, you know, when you show people $100 bills, anybody who sold the bike knows that lots of talk shows up. But, like, you know, some people, they show up. That's how I bought my fiance's bike. This guy was selling it, a Yamaha 650, an XS650 Maxim. His kids were going, oh, Dad, what are you selling the bike for? I said, because you got to go to college. That's why. I said, how much you want for it? 15. I said, kids, I'm sorry. I'm going to beat your father up right in front of you. I said, I'm giving you $1,200 and I'm not paying another penny. I got a trailer. I got a trailer and a pickup. And you know what? I said, all I need you to do is help me load it into the
back. You know what they say now? It's like, screw the kids. I'm getting a bike.
Oh, my God. Now I could probably resell her bike for probably a premium, but I bought that Honda, and Vinny, once again, like, you know, so the first bike I bought was a Honda. It was a up and down, high low gear, no big deal. Anybody could do that, and you can mount the throttle on the left. Biltwell makes the whiskey throttle, which is push pull. You can it's adaptable.
Right.
You can mount the brake on the left, the brake cylinder. None of that's a big deal. And all my switches are on the left too. So my throttle, my switches, my front brake is on the left, and then the cutoff switch. We usually find a place for that somewhere, you know.
Well, let me ask you this. I have a question. Were your brakes linked? Front and back, were they linked? No, they weren't.
No. I the foot brake is in the normal spot, right. And the front brake is over on the throttle side, which is kind of like weird. I've had some two-handed guys ride my bike, and some of them are like, once I got used to it, it was okay. Most of them were like, man, I hate it. Like, I can't get used to it. It just freaks me out. You know,
yeah.
I was at a party. I was at a Revzilla party, and I let this dude take my bike. He was gone for 2 hours. My NC700X came back. He's like, this was great. He's like, everyone's like, you let him take your bike? I was like, sure, why not? He wanted to see. You know, it was like, it's a pleasure. You know, he was a accomplished rider. I let him ride it. So, but that's the other part, right? Like, I can't get on anybody else's bike and ride theirs. It's kind of it's a real tragedy.
Well, let me ask you that. So it's like, why couldn't the prosthetic perform all your functions that you would have on a right hand?
Because you could mount the prosthetic attachment on the right grip, but then I got to still flip everything over. You can't do that, like, at street side, right? Like, you got to – and then what do you do about the clutch? So this is the problem I thought would never could be accomplished until I went to a museum not far from where I'm sitting right now in Maggie Valley, Wheels Through Time Museum. And if anybody out there has not been there
– I have not.
Them. What's that?
I have not been through Wheels to Time. I've heard about it, and I've seen plenty about it. I've never been there, though.
So there are about 600-plus motorcycles in there, all from the early 1900s on, all American-made.
Right.
Many Harley-Davidsons, many race-winning bikes, other things. But it's the museum that runs, meaning they're all not display bikes. Every bike starts up and runs.
Oh, that's nice.
And, you know, I had seen on TV and they'd mentioned that and I'm thinking, oh, bullshit, right? Like, yeah, they all run. And so I went to the museum. It's only 5 miles from my fiance's grandmother's house, right?
Yeah.
So I went down there one day and I'm standing there looking at an exhibit and this guy putts past me on a Harley and it's Dale Woxler, late Dale Woxler, who runs the place, and he's on one of the bikes. So I happened to see him somewhere else and I said, hey, Dale, I said, look, here's my problem, like in a nutshell. And he talked to me for a while and he said, I'll be right back. And he came back and he gave me a card for a guy named Gary at EFM Auto Clutch. Have you ever heard of him?
No, I can't say I have.
Have you heard of Recluse Clutch? Recluse?
No, I have not.
So they're automatic clutches. Recluse is on a lot of dirt bikes, so you don't need a clutch to shift, essentially. On Gary's website, EFM Auto Clutch, you know, he advertises that you send him the clutch housing for any bike and he'll send it back to you as a centrifugal force automatic clutch.
Wow.
So you don't even need a clutch lever on the bike. You can upshift, downshift. You can do whatever you do with a clutch lever, but you don't even need the clutch lever. And you can either buy like a fully assembled clutch from him or you could send him your own. So like I call this guy, you know, and kind of dubious. And I said, can you really do like any bike? Because I had this Honda Bobber project and, you know, he kind of growls at me. Yeah, it says any bike. We can do any bikes. All right. So I sent the guy the clutch and, you know, the guy was like so cool. You know, you could call him and you know, your shop guy could call him and he could guide you through doing stuff. And we got the EFM clutch on that Honda. And let me tell you, you've seen the picture that's got those huge Metzler knobby tires on it.
Thing's
like, it's kind of like a bar hopper. You're not going to take it to, you know, to California from Philly, but. But that thing is like a mean, it's like 750 cc's on a bicycle frame, right? And it is just super, super fun. But I want to mention one other thing. The prosthetic itself is, if anybody's ever seen the movie On Any Sunday, I think you may have mentioned,
somebody
mentioned that on your podcast. That movie is like with Steve McQueen and Mert Lawhill is really – it's about him. He was the most winningest racer for Harley-Davidson in the 70s and 80s.
Right.
And I guess a friend of his lost his arm and asked Mert to develop something to help him ride. And he developed what's called the Mert hand. So the Mert hand is just really just a glove kind of that I wear on my arm. And it's got a little – I kind of lock it in place. And I have my full arm right up to to my wrist, and it's got a little rod sticking out of the bottom with a ball at the end of it. Well, that ball clicks into a coupler on my handlebars. I can pull as hard as I want. Like if I want to do a wheelie, I could pull that hard on them, and it would not come out. Wow. But if I get hit from the side or hit anywhere, it's five ball bearings that hold that ball into place in that coupler. And it will slide out so that the bike doesn't drag me when I if I get into a crash, which thank God I haven't so far.
That's amazing. That's brilliant.
It's legendary. And since I went to the Advanced Arm Dynamics where they did this work for me, where we drew it out, I've met many people have gone in there. They've called me up and said, hey, can you come in here and talk to this guy about your motorcycle prosthetic? Like, you know, he doesn't, not sure about it.
Right.
Wow. And, you know, some of them were people who've been riding all their life as a hobby and now thought their hobby was gone.
Yeah. So you're kind of like an inspiration to a lot of other disabled people who might want to ride.
You know, people have said that to me, and as a person who's kind of lived the kind of life I've lived, it's kind of hard to take. But, you know, I think that we're all inspirational. You know, a lot of people, I can't even tell you, Ted, the amount of people I've met who talked about or thought, said out loud, I should have a podcast. You know, well, you got to do it. And the hard work, and you know, so, and, you know, and I benefited from your podcast. I'm sure many others have as well. But, you know, I'm just out there doing it.
Yeah.
And I don't think of myself as inspirational. I tell people, what's the most common thing you hear from people about why they won't or don't ride a motorcycle?
They're afraid.
Right.
It's dangerous.
Right.
They
know somebody who got killed.
Right. They know that. Well, I have kids.
There's right.
another one. Can't afford it is another one. Most of them, in my estimation, I think are weak excuses.
Yeah.
I think it's personal fear. I think more than anything else, it's just fear of the unknown because they've never tried it.
You know, I had never ridden a motorcycle in my life. I've got this prosthetic thing. I have no clue as to, like, you know, how it works. And I had never ridden a motor. So all of a sudden, I had to pick up my motorcycle at the airport in Philly. Well, I live in Fishtown, right?
Yeah.
So that's like 16 miles as the crow flies on 95 to get that bike back to my house. So I'm going to tell you, I am not a proud man. I was crying tears of fear on that bike on 95. I was so scared when I got home. I parked it, didn't get on it for 2 weeks.
Wow. You know? Okay. Well,
but because it's scary. I mean, but you know what?
You passed the test. That's what it was. You passed the test.
Lots of things in life are scary, right?
Sure. Yeah. But you persevere and you push forward. Yeah. You know, you can't let your, I always say from my personal experience, doesn't even compare to yours, but I don't let anything physical prevent me from doing the things I love to do. Of course, I just broke my collarbone, so I can't ride, but that doesn't mean I haven't gone out to the bike and sat on it and see if I could reach the bars yet, you know? So,
you know, Ted, that's why I eschew motor bicycles and I stick to, stick to the ones with motors. Yeah.
Well, you know, I never claimed to be smart.
Yeah, well, you're pretty smart, but you know, and then so I went through this in Philadelphia, like, you know, calling all these people, doing all this stuff, and I thought it was over with. You know, I got a Honda NC700X, you know, that one's 6-speed from the factory, automatic, and you know, all I had to do is get everything switched over to the left, pretty easy. But then I moved here to Waynesville. And, you know, of course, you really can't live down here. And I don't know, I didn't feel like I could hold my head up driving around a couple of Hondas, right? So I had to begin the search earnestly for a Harley Davidson. Like, that's everyone's, I don't, you know, I hear a lot of guys talk on podcasts that, oh, Harley, screw Harley. You know what? Whatever you want to ride, I love it.
Right? Who cares, right? Right, exactly.
I don't care if you want to ride a scooter. Although, I heard somebody say if a scooter was a motorcycle, they wouldn't call it a scooter, right?
That's funny. I've never heard that before. That's pretty good.
Logical, so I enjoy that, right? Yeah. It's true. Huh? You can't refute that.
No.
You know, I'd always been one of those guys who rode a Honda, and when I went into Vinny's shop, you know, all those guys in there, all those Harleys roll in and roll out, and you can't help but have an envious eye if you love motorcycles, looking at some of those bikes because they're all unique. Many of those guys had made them unique, and they're just beautiful bikes. And you know, then you'd hear one start up, and hear the V twin, and they, you know, it's a little different than your Honda, right? And you know,
pretty much, yeah.
and you kind of want to roll your bike around the corner when you start your bike up, right? See you later, guys. You know, just gonna push start it, right? Yeah. So I got down here, and I hadn't even had a job yet, right? I was gonna transition jobs. I figured it wouldn't be a big deal. And I started hunting. You know, I always believe the best time to buy a motorcycle is in the middle of winter, right before Christmas.
Oh, yeah.
Everyone's short of cash. So I found this guy, and I'm new down here, so I couldn't even pronounce the town. I was like, where are you? And I'm trying to Google it. And you know, I looked at my girlfriend. I said, listen, I said, the map says it's 28 miles from here. I said, I'll be back within the hour with this bike. So I leave with the trailer and the truck and, you know. She's like, you're crazy. On these mountain roads, it's not 28 miles. It's not 28 minutes. So, you know, I'm climbing this mountain. Snow's starting to fall, right? And so I get an hour and a half later, I get there, and this guy's got an 08 Softail Heritage.
Nice.
With 19,000 miles on it.
Really?
Yeah. It's in mint condition, wow. Right? Get this. I knew about the bike and what year it was and the mileage and the guy's story. Unfortunately, the wife made him sell it because he was getting the onset of dementia. You know, always painful story. And so I show up there, but the barn doors, I mean, it was like a dream. The barn doors fly open and there's the bike sitting there. But guess what? It's got Florida plates on it, right? Ah. Like, who wouldn't want, like, you know, so... The bike's in mint condition. I asked how much you want for it, and he said, $5,800. And not a bad price. And, you know, so once again, I gave him the, I said, you know, I said, anybody else show up to look at this? He said, well, one guy bought, you know, 2 months ago, and when I told him the price, he said, well, good luck with that. And he turned around and left.
Right.
So I said, let's start it up. And, you know, of course, everybody down here has what they call lawnmower gas, right? Like it was out of gas. So, you know, it's no ethanol, right?
Right. Yeah, perfect.
Yeah, you don't put corn liquor in your bike. And But every gas station around here sells it.
It's amazing. It sucks. Up here, you can't find it in Jersey. You can't find non-ethanol fuel in Jersey.
I googled it in Philly, in the surrounding areas. There's like one place. It's like 40 miles outside of town.
In fact, but, my place upstate New York, all the stations sell non-ethanol fuel.
Farmers.
Yeah.
They need the small engines can't run on corn liquor.
That's right.
So... anyhow, so I said to the guy, we got it started up and I was satisfied and I said, I'll give you $5,000 for it and I'll take it away on that trailer right in back of me right now. So we shook on it and that was that. I got it back to my house in an 8x10 enclosed trailer and it served as a Christmas ornament out in front of the house for about 2 months. While I was dialing for dollars down here, trying to find somebody who could do the same thing that Vinny Lopiano in Philadelphia could do. So I was right back where I started, years older.
Damn. How long did it take? I guess you finally found somebody to make the modification for you. Right?
Yeah. You ever go to motorcycle rallies So, there's a guy there who I've been to a few times. I met the same guy who owns a clothing line, Cartel Baggers. And so I meet this guy, Hector. So I finally said, my girlfriend says, why don't you call Hector, see if he knows somebody? So I call this dude, and he goes, give me a couple days. Let me see what I can do. I swear to God, the next day he texts me this guy, Travis Smith, says, call him. He's in Clyde. He doesn't work on bikes. He's a machinist, but he's interested in your problem, and he wants to help you. This guy was like a clone of the other guy. He was like Harleys have a weird clutch, I guess, where when you apply the lever, it moves like in or out or something like that. So in trying to like fit it with the EFM clutch.
Yeah.
I mean, this guy got it accomplished, and now I'm riding around in that Softail.
How long did it take for him to make to fabricate what you needed?
This guy did it like from scratch without even looking at any of my other bikes. It probably took him about 2 months.
Wow. And now how long did it take you to get used to it?
Listen, I'm still not used to it.
Really?
Now, well, I mean, think about it. I'm riding an NC700X normally every day for 8 years back and forth to work in the city.
Yeah.
So I'm doing a lot of tight turns, stuff like that, on a bike that weighs 525 pounds that's pretty nimble, right? Yeah. And that's got the same kind of clutch as the Africa Twin, the dual clutch transmission.
Sure.
So it's nimble. So I get this bike back, and I've literally had like maybe six, 8 hours of riding time on it, just like, you know, around town here and on the near highways and, you know, some of the country roads. And I get a call one day, and this guy's like, "Hey, you want to go riding with us?" And my fiance's like, "Oh, go riding with the boys. You know, you'll make friends, blah, blah, blah." So I was like, "Oh, okay." So I get on my bike and I go meet these guys, and like, you know, 6 hours later, I return like, you know, white knuckled, and my girlfriend says, you know, How is the Rattler? You know, they're just like the tail of the dragon. They got the Rattler.
Yeah. Okay.
All these tight turns, and like, you know, I'm maneuvering this tractor trailer of a Softail Heritage. You know, compared to, you know, through there, and they had three guys in front of me, right, and two guys in back of me to kind of keep an eye on me. They weren't, you know, they didn't say as much, but they weren't shitting me, right?
Yeah.
And so we got to this bar in Del Rio, Tennessee, you know, and man, I'll tell you, I'm not lying. I got out of the 100 or whatever turns it was that we made, I maybe touched the double yellow like twice, right? Like, but there was no, thankfully, there was no oncoming traffic,
sure,
or anything.
Yeah.
But I did pretty, so I got there. I said, "God's honest truth," you know, like, you know, in a couple of these guys are like one percenters, you know, they're like, "Yeah, you did great. You did great." And I was just like, you know, it just felt unbelievable that accomplished riders felt like I did okay on this, but I didn't take that way back. I took highway all the way back.
Yeah. But you know what? The Heritage, you know, cause I own a Heritage too. And it's, although it's not a light bike, you know, we're talking almost 700 pounds,
right?
It's still, from the rider standpoint, it's still kind of nimble because your center of gravity is so low on that thing.
And that's why I bought it, because I'm only 5'8", 135 pounds. And, you know, so when I decided to buy a Harley, you know, they used to, the guy I told you about, Vinny, used to kind of mock people with Sportsters, right? And, you know, so I kind of developed an attitude about him. So, but everyone who I talked to told me that the Heritage is got a low center of gravity. So I have found that to be true. It's just, you know, like everything else, I don't care how much riding years you, when you get a new bike, like, you got to learn your bike.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, the only way to do that is just to keep riding it. So that's what I've been doing.
You know, I did notice about that bike, the Heritage, I'm looking at your picture now, it's got the hard bags on it, which I don't see very often.
Yeah.
Was that something you put on there, or did that your previous owner put that on there?
Yeah, no, I took the original bags were in mint condition. I know different people feel different ways about this, but I just didn't like the look. I wanted more of a sleek, like more modern look.
Okay, all right.
And the other thing is too is, you know, I'm not one of these guys. I take my bike to work, you know, through the mountains, and you know, I bring stuff with me. So like, I have luggage on my other bikes too, but I just wanted something that was, I thought, felt would be more waterproof, but I like the look. And then of course, then the debate comes, do I get the bags or the extended bags? But what you can see on there is I also took the stock exhaust off, and I put a full Vance and Hines fishtail exhaust on there, which are unfortunately
kind
of blocked out by the extended hard bags.
I love the fishtail pipes, man. I want to put those on mine so bad.
I was kind of, you ever talk out loud about what you'd like to do to your motorcycle? I was doing that a couple of guys, the Travis Smith, the guy who did the mods, and I said, I'd love to put fishtail straight pipe. He goes, you know, I know a dude who just took his almost new ones off his because he didn't like them for whatever reason. He might be able to work a deal. Now, you know, those pipes are like $1,200,
yeah,
right?
Yeah,
so
they're
I
pricey.
Ended up picking them. I said, once again, Teddy, he said, he'll take $600. I said, tell him I'll give him $450. So I ended up picking him up for $450.
No way. Oh, wow.
Yeah, but you know what, God. Man? I'll tell you what. When you start that bike, the sound of those things is,
you know,
just beautiful.
One of the things I like about those, the fishtails, is, yes, they are louder. But the thing is, the sound is way behind you. So it's not going to deafen you. you know, which is,
well, I can listen to your podcast while I'm riding.
Right. See, because I got, for example, I used to have the Screaming Eagle 2s on my bike,
yeah,
but they ended right next to my ear. I couldn't hear myself think. It took them off.
Do you ride with, can I ask you, do you ride, I don't mean to interview the interviewer, but do ride with, do you ride with an intercom or like,
do you listen to music? I do. Yeah, I do.
Also, yeah, I've heard other people say, well, I just like, I don't like to ride with anything. I like to listen to podcasts or music or my playlist, Spotify, whatever.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
I think it's a great thing, but so I've been really fortunate, you know, like every, so many people in my life, most people said, you're crazy. Don't do it. You're nuts. My uncle got killed on a motorcycle. You know, my brother knew, had a cousin who had a friend who had a sister who knew a guy, you know, it's always like that. And I was like, you know, come on, you know, I got to ask you, when you were a kid, right, and you, some, you know, guy rode up on a bike and parked it, like, while you're with your dad, and you stood there on the street and stared at the thing, maybe you were 6 or 7 years old, I don't care almost who you were, like, you looked at that thing and you thought, man, that guy's cool, and that bike is cool, right, and at least I did as a boy.
Yeah, and, yeah.
And that to me overrode, like, you know, I don't, you know, maybe it sounds crazy for a well-educated person to say, but like, I just wanted to be cool, right? I wanted to experience that, and I wanted to feel like that. What is it that draws people to motorcycles? And you know, you've asked the question to people, well, how do you feel? How does it feel when you're on a motorcycle? How would you describe it? Or people have asked you, and it's really the most vexing question.
Yeah,
because there's really almost, to the motorcyclist, I would think there's really no completely satisfying answer to that question, because it is so many things.
Yeah, so many things to so many different people. Everybody has different reason.
And but for me, you know, I got to tell you, like, I almost died 3-4 times. The coma that I was in was just the latest bit of excitement that I had in my life. So, you know, there are many things that kind of like move you beyond your disability, your trauma. And for me, being on a motorcycle, I don't know how else to explain it. It was almost instantaneous. When you're on that thing, everything else pretty much goes away.
Exactly.
You know, you got the wind whipping through your hair. You're not looking, well, here I am, a disabled motorist. You know, no, you're not. You're just Camille on a bike.
Yeah, exactly. You're just right.
On a bike, and
you're just a motorcyclist. That's it.
And the other thing is, too, is, you know what? No matter who you run into, anywhere you are, no matter, you're on a motorcycle and another motorcyclist, for the most part, passes you or stops at the same gas station or whatever, almost always they interact with you in the most positive manner. And, you know, maybe people who have scuba diving as a habit, hobby, have that same experience with other scuba divers. I don't know of any of them. But you know what? I hear that always said of motorcyclists.
Yeah.
And
Jeepers, apparently.
Know, what's that?
And apparently people who drive Jeeps.
And, well, yeah, that's a whole different podcast. But, but you know, motorcycling, and so what I try to urge people, my message to people is, you know, it's a terrible thing to live in is fear, right? Exactly. So move beyond your fears, whatever they are. For me, it was, you know, moving beyond my disability, not thinking I could ride a motorcycle.
Right.
But, you know, all of that's been just proven hogwash. And now the question is how many motorcycles can I afford to, because, you know, for me, every motorcycle is like another $2,500 expense to buy. If it's a stand, like, you know,
yeah. Cause you're not just buying a bike, you're also buying the modifications also.
And then who's going to want, it's mine for life. Nobody's going to want to buy it after I get done with it. Right.
Well, yeah. Well, since losing your hand, how many bikes have you owned and made the modifications to?
Let's see, including a Honda Metropolitan scooter that I just did some, I think six.
Wow. And you do you still have all of them?
I have three.
You have three of them. Okay.
Yeah.
So you were able to sell the other ones you modified.
I did the, well, actually, no, the Metropolitan got stolen. It was Philadelphia. It got stolen, recovered, then stolen again.
Oh, really? Oh, my God.
And yeah, here's the great thing. We called the Philadelphia cops over, right? So we said, oh, we got video camera system. So they watched the video of, like, these three guys breaking into my yard and stealing the scooter. And then, like, can we download it? I said, sure. And then they erased the SD card and lost all the footage. So nothing came of it. Wow. But I will tell all your viewers, make sure you have comprehensive on your motorcycle. It's cheaper than dirt. And as an insurance agent, they can't go wrong.
That's right.
Wow. Protected against vandalism.
So what do you think, what would you consider to be the most challenging part of riding for you now?
The most challenging part of riding is for me distance. Because of my injury and I do have some nerve damage on my right side, for me, like, you know, holding my arms like in the riding position for, you know, 6, 7, 8 hours in a day can be a little difficult. So I'm probably more prone to, like, more frequent, like, breaks, like stopping every hour and a half, or even if it's 15 minutes or so, and stretching out a little bit.
Well, so do you get fatigued a lot faster then?
I don't know if it's fatigue, but, like, I get the, you know, I've had this since I had my accident. Now it's been 40 years. I've had this, like, you know, pain in the right side of my arm that never goes away. It's right there every day, no matter what. So I guess you would say it just gets more pronounced. I don't really get, you know, I'll tell you, I rode from Philly down to Waynesville once, right? And I got one of those apps that said you could check the weather the whole way down, right?
Right.
What a bunch of BS. Said it was clear skies the whole way. I get 15 minutes outside of Philly, it starts spitting. And I figured, you know, my girlfriend's behind me, like, in the chase car, right? She was worried about me. She was driving down to see Nana anyway. And so I figured I'll just ride right through it, right? Now, it was like the cloud was following me, like, 9 hours down to Waynesville. You know? So it was like white knuckle. But I wanted to prove to myself that a one-handed guy could ride from Philly to, you know, the western North Carolina. Yeah. And I wanted to prove to myself that I could do it.
Wow.
And I showed up here, man. I'll never forget. I took my boots off and just turned them upside down. They were, quote unquote, waterproof, right? Water just rushed out of them, you know. and I was just like, I went to like the front porch of the corner and just stared out into space for like.
There's no such thing as waterproof.
But, yeah, there's never any such thing as waterproof. I don't give a shit what anybody says. But fatigue is it really a problem? You know, I got to tell you though, that's really like my only challenge. And I think the other challenge is most people have too. You're lucky. Your brother, I think, lives is near a geographic space as you can tolerate him, I suppose. So you guys can go riding together. But I think I ran into the same problem everywhere is, I don't have anybody to go riding with. Like, nobody has anybody to go riding with.
Yeah.
Right? So, you know, that's a challenge. But you know what? Like, instead of driving through the drug infested, filth infested neighborhoods of Philly, at least I'm in the Smoky Mountains now. I can get on my bike and I can ride, you know, to some of the most beautiful places, like, you know, in America.
Yeah, yeah. What has been the reaction from other riders who meet you?
People are astonished. I mean, when I, you know, we went to Del Rio at the Barbarossa Saloon. Like, I have a park that around all these hard scrabble Harley guys that, you know, they look like parolees, you know, this guy's like, I'm going over to get something out of my saddlebag, and this guy's standing there looking near my bike, and I'm kind of easing myself around his. I don't want to even put a speck of dust on it, right? And you know, what is that on your right, your right handle grip there? And, you know, so when I tell him, you know, and like I told Mailers, they're just astonished. They want to see the whole getup, the whole rig. When I took my motorcycle safety class, the state police, who largely do them, I think, or used to do them in Pennsylvania, wanted to take video and take pictures.
Wow.
Of me. you know, it's the same almost everywhere that, you know, people have never seen anything like it before. They've never, it never even entered their mind. Like, gee, how would a one-handed guy ride a motorcycle, right?
Yeah.
And you get the smart aleck answer from, you know, a lot of old-time bikers that will tell you, I know this guy, he only had one arm and he rode his Harley, you know. Well, you know, suppose you had a pothole like in Philly that's like 8 inches deep, right? Like, you know, holding one side of the handlebar might be difficult in a situation like that. So that's not really that good of advice. But I just, you know, people are just astonished, and you know, almost nobody understands that there are modifications out there. If somebody like the clutch, there are people who can do. You know, kind of see your dream and can do the modifications like the clutch, the brakes, the other stuff that you need done.
Yeah. That's great. Well, listen, so how can people learn more about you and maybe get in and help other disabled riders?
Well, they could email me. I don't have a website or anything yet, but they can email at me at thekbz@gmail.com.
All right.
And you know, if they have any questions regarding the MERT hand or how to go about finding somebody, you know, there's a motorcycle riders, disabled motorcycle riders Facebook page that I have to tell you that didn't exist a few years ago. And there are people all over the world on there posting their pictures, some that are much worse off than me in terms of what the limbs that they've lost, like legs and both legs and, you know, whole arms. And these people, and they make me look like a pipsqueak. I mean, these people have modified trikes and with VWN, all kinds of crazy shit,
right?
You know, just to be on. You know, Ted, I saw a girl on a motorcycle riding around a farm field on an enduro bike, and she only had one arm, and she was able to, I don't even know how to shift it, but she was riding around in a circle. It brought me to tears, you know, thinking that, like, and I forget where she was, but her whole family. Whereas, like, you know, that was the other unbelievable part too. Even though her bones were brittle or whatever, her own father had encouraged her to do this and to get on a bike and ride because that was her dream. And, you know, that's what it's all about. You know, I mean,
no limitations, man. No limitations. Yeah, that's great.
You're probably always dreaming about the next time you're getting on your bike, right?
Oh hell yeah! I'm out there almost every day trying to say, I can reach the bars now. I can reach the bars. Yeah. That's good. And everybody's like shaking their finger at me. You're not getting on the bike yet. Any words of encouragement to those who may be disabled and still want to ride?
You know, my encouragement is find a way. Talk to people. Don't let anybody tell you're crazy. Make as many phone calls. Be as big a nuisance as you have to. Because if you dig long enough and hard enough, there are people out there with a willing and kind and willing and giving heart who, you know, it's not just going to be an invoice to them or billable hours. It's going to be something more than that. The guy who did my Harley broke down, and he's a big, massive dude, man. He broke down watching me haul off on that thing and all worried about me and everything. But you know what? You know, and the people who love you will also support you and help you do this too. But don't be afraid. You know, get educated about it. Find out, you know, how you can do it. And, you know, don't be like me for a long time just thinking it's something you can't do. It's beyond your reach.
That's awesome. Well, Camille, listen, I want to thank you very much for being on the podcast. You've been a great inspiration, and I hope people get something from this. And
thanks, Ted.
You know, it's been great having you on. Stick around. I want to talk to you afterwards. But thank you very much for being on the show. And then also, thanks for listening to the podcast.
Always.
Thank you, sir. What a Cycle Man podcast is supporting David's Dream and Believe Cancer Foundation. Go over to davidsdreamandbelieve.org to donate and see your money go to something that actually makes a difference. And of course, the Gold Star Ride Foundation, helping families of fallen soldiers. If you would like to be a part of a great cause and get some heartfelt miles in, go to goldstarride.org and learn how you can participate in the next Gold Star Ride. Thank you for joining me and Camille here over on the V-Twin Cafe on the Motorcycle Men podcast, where we talked about his disability
and his ability to continue riding. Don't forget to go over to Ride with Ted YouTube channel and watch some of the many videos that we have over there, including the Ted Shed and the Ride with Ted videos. Good stuff. And of course, t-shirts, sweatshirts, and other apparel can now be purchased on the shop page of the website. All right, for the rest of the Motorcycle Men team, thanks for listening. And remember, boys and girls, we say stupid crap so you don't have to. Ride safely, kids.